closer.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Sean and Eds Do Baseball.
I'm Sean.
And I'm Eds.
And we're here bringing you baseball history.
That's right. We're a bi-weekly baseball history podcast where the story catcher doesn't know what the story pitcher is out towing the rubber, throwing them.
It's the cross-up league.
It is the cross-up league. It's a little bit, I think it's a cool name. It like sounds, you know, the cross-up league could be like your fans.
Yeah, you know? The crosses, you know, they bring... crosses. Anyway. No. Maybe X's? I don't know. Okay, never mind.
Moving on.
Did you already do we're a bi-weekly baseball history podcast?
Yes, I did.
Podcast?
Of course I did.
That's great. I've totally forgot about that. Well, Edsy, where can people find
us? People can find us on Twitter, at Doing Baseball, and on Instagram and TikTok, at Doing.Baseball. And I'm on Twitter, x.com, whatever you're calling it these days, at EdsDoBaseball.
And I'm at SeanDoBaseball. And wherever you're listening to us, and however you're listening to us, any reviews, any ratings, any follows, anything like that really helps the podcast. So we really appreciate if you could do that. We put a lot of effort into this. As you know, Edsy, 40, 50, 60 hours a month. I'm kidding. but we do put a lot of effort into this. So any help is appreciated. And as always, thank you for listening.
Yes, thanks for listening.
Also, thank you to our sponsor, Two Loons Brewing. Got a great update from them today. They got their own facility about to go down. They're going to start brewing some beers real soon. But
Go up? Yeah.
Go up?
Yeah, the facility is going up. It's not going down.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It is going up, not down. And they're going to start brewing some great beers real soon. And they already have a couple with their Two Loons IPA and Two Loons Lager. Look out for them at LCBOs and across Ontario and wherever you're getting your beer. And as always,
please be of legal drinking age and, of course, enjoy responsibly.
Yeah. Okay, so is this story about to go up or go down?
It's going down now. Okay. I think. You've sort of alluded to the fact that it may be going down, so that's the feeling I get.
It's interesting. So this is actually about two people. I think this is my first time. Obviously, we've had subjects other than individuals, but this is my first time kind of doing a biography of two people at the exact same time. So bear with me, Edsy.
Okay.
We're going to start with Thomas Andrew Rogers. He's born on February 12th, 1892 in Sparta, Tennessee.
All right. Tom Andrew Rogers.
That's right.
Okay. Tennessee.
He grew up in nearby Gallatin, Tennessee, just outside Nashville.
Uh-huh.
And I really couldn't find anything on Tom as a kid. But the one thing was for sure, Eds, he could throw a fucking ball.
All right, as most people in our stories can.
Yeah, but this guy particularly, so he gets the name. So I just in case nobody gets it, Gallatin, Tennessee sounds somewhat vaguely to like a Gatlin gun.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah.
So he, by a teenager, is known as the Gallatin Gunner.
I like it. That's a great name.
Yeah. And he's a teenager.
That'd be a great team name.
The actually. Gallatin Gunners?
Yeah.
There's so many silly team names that you're 100% right. That would be much better than all the other names. In 1913, at the age of 21, Rogers joined the Henderson Kentucky Hens. There's...
That's all right. That one's okay.
The Henderson Hens?
Yeah.
All right. They're of the Kentucky, Illinois, and Tennessee League. It was a Class D league that had no MLB affiliations, at least the team he played for. But the Gallatin Gunner impressed and went 5-0 that season on the mound, so much so that the next year he started to get attention from major league teams.
Okay.
Rogers decided to head home and sign with the Nashville Volunteers of the Southern Association.
I know about the Vols.
Yeah, you know the Vols.
Yeah.
This story's all about the Vols.
Okay, sweet.
I hope you don't know where this is going.
I have no idea.
Oh, this
is great.
I just
know of the Vols. I don't know all about them.
Okay, great.
Did I say I know all about them? I probably did, but what I meant was I just know of them.
Well, you would know about Tom Rogers if you knew all about the Voles, mm-hmm. let's just say.
Okay.
So
here, another famous Vole, quickly aside, was Coker Triplett.
Yeah, absolutely. There's actually a number of guys that came through Nashville. Obviously, the South was like a hub for baseball players back in this time. Mm-hmm. A lot of guys came through Nashville. And let's just talk about Nashville for a second. This is from W.M. Akers' article on Narratively. And this is about the stadium where they played. And I quote, "In those days, Nashville baseball was played at Sulphur Dell, which the New York Times once called the world's most improbable ballpark. The playing area was mitten-shaped, long to left field and center, just 262 feet to right, where the wall was topped by a screen 10 feet taller than the Green Monster. Outfielders were known as mountain goats because of the outfield dump, a steep hill in right field that rose as high as 22 and a half feet and earned the park's nickname, Suffer Hell."
I do know about this park. Yes.
You do. You're very well versed on the history of some old baseball parks.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know too much more in depth beyond what you said there. But as soon as you said Sulphur Dell, I was like, oh, I'm pretty sure that's the place with all the billboards in right field and that weird quarter pipe going up.
Oh, there's a little bit of that coming up in a few, probably 15, 20 minutes. Rogers was used extremely sparingly in his first year in Nashville, possibly because although he could throw very, very hard, he was wild as fuck.
Okay, a little, what's his name? Wild Thing.
Wild Thing, yeah. He sported a 4.7 base on balls per 9 innings, so walking a guy every other inning.
Okay.
In a small amount of work, though. He had a gun for an arms, but sometimes the ball could come out more like a shotgun than a rifle, and he earned his nickname Shotgun Rogers.
Okay, so they're downgrading his firearm as his career goes.
He's more buckshot than than precision round.
Yeah.
In 1915, Shotgun Rogers pitched a lot more. At the age of 23, he threw 293 innings and lowered his base on balls per 9 innings to 3.2. There's a little bit more control.
Okay.
He's getting better with the control, but on July 4th, 1915, Rogers struck John Taff of the Chattanooga Lookouts in the head with a pitch. The pitch would fracture Taff's skull and end Taff's career.
Oh my God, I'm amazed it didn't end his life.
It's fucking, yeah. This guy, the best part was when I was reading this, and they were like, just mentioned Shotgun Rogers, and they're like, talking about something we'll talk about later, and he's like, after he ended someone's career, or they think they called him Taft. They're like, after he ended Taft of Chattanooga's career, who has not played since getting struck in the head. And I was like, what? Like, you just, I've read so much on this guy.
You just glazed over that. You guys got to expand.
Yeah, yeah. So I found a little bit more on the other thing. I found out it was Taff, not Taft. Maybe okay. That was just the newspaper I was trying to read that was uh-huh. super old. It was the same year that he almost killed somebody pitching for Nashville, that Shotgun Rogers met his new teammate, Johnny Dodge. Dodge was a slick fielding third baseman who had already made the big leagues, but was sent to Nashville halfway through the 1914 season. The two roomed together on the road and became fast friends.
Okay. I like that guy's name too.
Well, we're about to learn a lot more about John Dodge. So John Lewis Dodge Jr. was born April 27th, 1893, a few months after, right? Mm-hmm, they're about mm-hmm. the same age, in Bolivar County, Mississippi, which is adjacent to Tennessee, uh-huh. To Dr. John Lewis Dodge Sr. and Francis May Richardson Dodge. John Sr. had grown up in a very prominent Kentucky family in Louisville with ties all the way back to George Washington.
Okay.
So very prominent.
Old money.
Yeah, definitely wealthy, but like not aristocratically wealthy, but like just like they had the right people in the family.
Okay. Okay.
The
connections.
Yeah. The couple met in Tennessee, and John and yeah, they had John and his sister Mary Elizabeth, but growing up did not go as planned. Francis May contracted tuberculosis, and the family moved to Arizona, thinking the dry climate may save her life.
Okay.
And it did not. She died when John was 9 in November 1902.
That's too bad.
Yeah. Very much too bad, because John Sr. would not last much longer.
Oh, God.
He died accidentally a year and a half later. The Vicksburg Herald reporting on May 12th, 1904, that John Dodge Sr. had accidentally overdosed using chloroform to ease a headache.
Oh my God. To ease a headache?
Yeah.
Fuck. So, must have been real easy to overdose back then.
Yeah.
I mean, it's easy to overdose right now, but...
But, I have a headache. I'm going to go knock myself out with chloroform.
Sniff this rag.
So at 11, John and his sister, who's younger than him, they're orphaned. So I don't know what happens in between, but probably not great stuff. They probably have rich family that they go live with or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. But Johnny Dodge would show up on the Newport Pearl Diggers of the Class D Northeast Arkansas League at just 16 years old.
Another amazing name.
Newport Pearl Diggers. Just absolutely. So he would hit .263 in 30 games in 1909 before joining the Jonesboro Zebras of the same league.
Oh my God. Okay.
Oh God.
Jonesboro Zebras. That one makes no sense.
Absolutely no sense.
I don't like that one.
No. Okay. See, it's dumb. I mean, the hens is better than zebras. By the end of 1910...
Well, hens make sense because it was Henderson.
Yeah.
There's no zebras in Jonesboro, I'm sure.
I don't think
but so. But I don't know what... Like, what are you going to say? The Jonesboro Joneses?
The Jonesboro Jackals?
There you go. There okay. you go.
If we're using alliteration. Yeah. You don't need alliteration for a name, but it helps. Anyways... So he's considered a top prospect in the Arkansas State League, and obviously he's hitting well. He had brilliant defense at shortstop and a good bat. So he signs with the Norfolk Tars of the Class C Virginia League.
Mm-hmm.
There he hits .246 in 480 at-bats in 1911, but he impressed more so on the infield with time all around at third, second, and short. Right, he's a little bit more of a utility guy, but like great defense, you know, hopefully the bat comes around. The next year at 19, Dodge fucking raked. So the bat came around.
Okay. So now he's become a multi-tool player.
Yeah, in 1912, he would hit .303 with 17 doubles and 3 home runs in 122 games for Norfolk. And found a home at third base where he played superb defense, including a diving stop and then turning a triple play.
Oh, nice. Okay, so he's fully hitting his stride now.
Yeah, he's 19.
Okay.
So with that, the teenage Dodge would make it to the big leagues. On July 21st, his contract was sold to the Philadelphia Phillies, along with pitcher Joseph Happy Finnerman. For a reported $3,000. 2 weeks later, in August, Dodge reported to the Phillies. He sat for a couple weeks, but when Hans Lobert was sidelined for the rest of the year, Dodge got his chance at third base for the Phillies. On September 6, 1912, the Pittsburgh Press ran the headline, "Dodge of the Quakers looks like real star."
Okay, so he's impressing... Pittsburgh newspaper, anyway.
Yeah, but the reality was, in his September call-up, he would hit just .120 over 92 at-bats with one extra base hit.
Okay, that's not so good.
So they were all hyped about him at first, but then his first month in the big leagues as a September call-up doesn't go well. Dodge held out for better pay that off-season, but still signed by January. I didn't get much on that, but he played just 3 more games for the Phillies before being traded to Cincinnati for Beals Becker, which is a great name.
Mm-hmm.
So now he's with Cincinnati. He's with the Reds. He hits .242 with 4 home runs and 8 triples in 1913. But that offseason, changes were made with the Reds, and Dodge's contract was sold to the Louisville Colonels of the American Association. in basically AAA at the time.
Yeah. So he's got to go down.
Yeah.
He's going down.
Yeah, he's going down.
Not going up.
Not going up. Okay. No, he's on his way down. And obviously he hoped to go back up. It does not happen.
Ever?
We'll get there.
Okay, I don't want to jump ahead.
Dodge worked all winter to stay in shape and in order to have a good year and make it back to the big leagues. He showed up first to spring training camp that spring, the best shape of his life, you know, telling all the reporters.
As they say.
He's like, woo! He kept in shape by hunting in Arkansas all offseason. So obviously after his parents died, Arkansas ended up becoming his home somehow.
Mm-hmm. Well, Arkansas was like spring training place at that time.
Yeah, but he lived there all offseason. It was like, I was hunting on offseason. I'm in great shape. He also told...
Hunted with my bare hands.
Well, that would be interesting in this case, because unfortunately he told reporters that he'd accidentally killed somebody's horse while hunting, mistaking it for a deer. God. So if he was like strangling a horse to death, thinking it was a deer...
Yeah, okay. He'd be blind.
Yeah, that's why he can't hit.
Yeah, I got you. It's all coming together.
Just like the hunting trip, 1914 season would not go as planned for Dodge. He hit just 201 with no home runs and also got in trouble for throwing the manager of the Broadway Hotel in Louisville through a plate glass window after a discussion about who was the best man on Louisville between Dodge and his teammates turned into a wrestling match.
I'll wrestle you for it.
And then the manager's like, you can't wrestle here. Just picks him up and fucking throws him through a window.
Oh my God.
So that happened on July 18th that year. And by July 27th, Dodge's contract is sold to Nashville.
Okay.
So.
They're like, we got to get this guy out of here. Threw the manager out of a window.
I think it was the hotel manager.
Or the hotel manager. Okay.
I know. That's like, boy, I should have just said hotel. Whatever, yeah. Not to confuse that, but it was the hotel. It was a hotel employee through a window.
Yeah, somehow that's not somehow. That is worse.
Dodge continued to play for the Vols, glove first all the way, and they renewed his contract for 1915. And now, like, we can circle back to Shotgun Rogers. The two roomed together, as I said, as I introduced him, during this time in Nashville. Mm-hmm. Right? They became great friends that season and the season after. And it's possible that given their...
Like, I love to hunt, and this guy's name's Shotgun. He's right on my alley.
You ever killed a horse with your bare hands? Yeah. I thought it was a deer.
That's why they call me Shotgun.
That was Dodge.
Yeah.
Anyways.
No, I know, but...
So, either way, it is possible... Yeah. It is possible, Eds, that they knew each other before this. I couldn't find any verifiable information.
And they were like, yeah, get my buddy.
Well, they were already, you know, they're the same age. They're from the same area. They might have played against each other at certain points. Who knows?
Ran into each other in the woods.
Yeah. Sorry, I killed your horse back then.
Yeah, it was his horse.
So it's possible that, but the two were inseparable with the Vols. But they were on very different trajectories with their careers. Shotgun was going up, and Dodge was going down.
Okay.
I totally changed what I actually wrote just for your analogy.
Yeah, I got you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Shotgun had a decent 1915, starting to show better control with his fastball, minus ending somebody's career, which I already told you about. Uh-huh. And Dodge, once again, struggled to do anything offensively, hitting just .235 for the Vols. So, from Dodge's Sabre bio, and I quote, Dodge's most notable moment of the season came on September 12th. Alas, it again involved disorderly conduct.
Who'd he throw out this time?
He and Chattanooga Lookout's manager, Kid Eberfield, were arrested after a run-in with Nashville fans in the second game of a doubleheader. Dodge's arrest came when he retorted with obscenities to the profane insults he heard upon trying to intervene in the fans' scuffle with Eberfield.
Wait, so he got arrested?
I don't understand why he got arrested.
He got arrested for swearing at a fan?
Who were swearing at him while trying to attack Kid Eberfield? Yeah. They're like, these fans were just simply attacking the opposing team's manager, and this guy started swearing at them.
He kept saying things of ill repute. And he should be injured.
So he's arrested. I don't know what happened there. Couldn't find any much. Anyways, Dodge was released at the end of the season from the Vols. So Rodgers and Dodge are separated, but they're friends still. And rumors of his commitment to staying out socializing rather than baseball began to swirl. So Dodge was at one point this 19-year-old like phenom that was playing in the majors for the Phillies.
Yeah.
And now he's like 24 and he keeps getting kicked off teams. And they're just like, yeah, this
guy. Johnny Manziel.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That is very,
a football guy, but you know.
Yeah, it's good.
If you're a sports person, you know what that means.
Yeah. So this is basically at the point where Johnny Manziel gets sent to the CFL.
So, okay.
Dodge was released at the end of the season. Rumors of his commitment, I already said that. They're like, oh, this guy just likes to party. And they called him like Singing Dodge in the press because he was out singing all night instead of getting a good rest before the game. He's just 26, and it looks like his career is pretty much over. Unfortunately, Dodge was still able to find a new home with the last place Mobile Seagulls of the same Southern Association.
Mm-hmm. I've heard of the Seagulls.
Another great name. That offseason, Shotgun Rodgers had almost signed a contract of a different kind, this time with the St. Louis Browns of the American League.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, they decided he needed a little bit more polishing. I think he'd been in contact with the Browns over the years. They were like, we're watching you. You know, we got your eye on you. Just keep doing well. And
I'm ready to come up, boys.
Yeah, and they're like,
don't call us. We'll call you.
One more year, Shotgun.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, they decided he needed one more year before his big league debut. So Dodge and Rodgers both play in the Southern Association in 1916.
On different teams now.
And the two stayed friends and stayed in contact, even though they were in different uniforms. Dodge had got off to a hot start that year, hitting .290 through the first 2 months. And Rodgers would put up his best season ever in 1916. He's like, I'm making the big leagues. Like,
But how old's Rodgers now?
They're both the same.
Oh, they're both the same.
I think they're both 20, late 20s. Yeah, 25, 26 okay, at this time.
I forgot time. About that. Yeah, that's right.
Even with the success for both players on the field that year, the baseball game played in Mobile, Alabama on June 18th, 1916, between the Nashville Volunteers and the Mobile Seagulls would cause both players to die an early death.
No, good Lord. What a twist.
Dodge.
Both of them died?
Don't jump ahead, Edzie.
Okay. I mean, you just said it.
They will both die by the end of this. Okay. Absolutely. Neither one at a ripe old age.
Okay.
Dodge was 1-for-2 off Rodgers as he came to the plate with 2 outs in the 7th inning. His single earlier had driven in a run off his old pal Rodgers, and the Gulls were controlling the game up 4-0. Dodge was known to kind of shuffle up in the box as the pitcher was winding up. So it's like not quite Happy Gilmore, but like a little bit of like, especially when apparently he could anticipate a curveball and he'd like go from the back of the box to the front of the box.
Mm-hmm.
Rodgers wound up as Dodge shuffled up in the batter's box. The fastball came out of Rodgers' right hand as hard as any pitch he had thrown that day, but stayed up with arm side run. Dodge tried to duck, but it was too late. The fastball struck him above his left eye.
And no helmets.
No helmets. It's 1916. Dodge was briefly knocked unconscious for several minutes.
That's not brief, John.
It's not brief.
I don't know if we have different definitions of brief, but anyway.
It's brief. I don't care. You got to be knocked out for 15 minutes until I consider it serious. But eventually, he's able to get up and get off the field. He goes into the showers. They're like, get some cold water.
Let's go have a cold shower, bud.
And he fucking passes out again in the showers.
Uh-huh.
He's examined by physicians, which the examination reveals his face was crushed in such a manner as complications may result.
No kidding. I mean, they've already resulted. He passed out.
He's very
twice.
Much- complications.
Yeah, there might be. We don't know.
We're going to use the word crushed. Yeah. His face is crushed. I think that's bad.
I don't know, though. There, it might be bad. It also might be complicated.
Complications.
Yeah.
You know. Well, anyway, so he's taken by to the nearby Inge Bondurant Sanitarium for observation, which is like, I don't think he needs observation.
No.
At the time, nobody seemed too concerned, right? Like, well, I mean, I think at this point, like, I think the people attending to him are concerned, but anybody at the game...
They forgot about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's over. And to basically, you know, after it, Rogers is like, oh, fuck, I just, like, knocked out my best friend.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I think the guy who takes Dodge's place on first base is there. And then it's like a comebacker. There's two outs. And Rogers, like, overthrows the first baseman. Another run comes around to score.
So he's rattled.
He's rattled by it. Obviously, you just knocked out your best friend. But nobody seemed too concerned, and the papers focused more on the great pitching by the Seagulls than Johnny Dodge not living up to his last name. I'm sorry.
They're like, let's forget about... Oh, I didn't even notice that part until after the fact. But yeah, no, I was just finding it funny that they like sort of like sweeping this guy's face crushing under the rug, and they're like, yeah, but the pitcher did awesome, so don't worry about that over here.
Oh yeah, our third baseman's in the hospital.
Nothing else to say.
So we joke, but the next day, on Monday morning at 10 a.m., Dodge fell into a coma, and later that day, Johnny Dodge died from internal hemorrhaging to the brain, killed by a fastball by one of his best friends.
Brutal.
Yeah,
that's a terrible, terrible story.
Well, we're not done yet.
I know,
This is gets weird. There's a lot from the Tennessean newspaper, and a lot of it's by this columnist named Blinky Horn.
I love that name too. Can you say it in a Tennessean accent?
Oh no! I don't ask me to do accent. Blinky Horn. I'm trying to do my brother Blinky Horn. I'm Blinky Horn with the Tennessee. Okay, so
this,
I can't read it like that, and you have to hear this because it starts out okay, but it gets really not okay, I think, by the end. And this is Blinky Horn eulogizing Johnny Dodge, and I quote, "The great umpire has called Johnny out. There will be no more close plays for the former Vol in the land where all decisions will be in his favor. In the big diamond, Johnny is safe at last. Brought down by a cannon speed ball hurled by Rogers, the Gull third sacker passed away in Mobile at 7:30 o'clock last night after being unconscious since Sunday. When first struck by the terrific drive fired by Rogers, reports indicated he would be able to recover. Many other players have been hit, and many have recovered, but the great umpire had marked Johnny Dodge for an out."
Which what an interesting metaphor. I kind of like it, but...
God is an umpire, yeah. Edsy.
I also noticed that they were still pumping up the pitching performance in that eulogy. The most excellent pitches by Rogers. The one that hit Dodge was a strike, by the way.
The Birmingham News put together a much classier article, in my opinion, on June 20th. And I quote, "Special, owing to the death of third baseman Johnny Dodge, the Memphis Mobile game scheduled for today has been called off. Dodge of the Mobile team died Monday night at a local sanitarium as the result of injuries received when struck in the face with a pitched ball during the Mobile Nashville game Sunday. Dodge died at 7:30 o'clock last night. He was struck while at bat in the seventh inning of Sunday's game with Rogers pitching for Nashville. He attempted to dodge the ball, but it broke into him as he fell to the ground. He died from concussion of the brain."
Okay. See, that one didn't hype up the pitching
performance. No. It continues, actually. The Memphis Mobile game scheduled for tomorrow has been canceled out of respect for player Dodge. Dodge is the second player of Mobile team to have been killed by a pitch ball. Old baseball fans recall the death of second baseman George Painter in Mobile in 1893, who was killed in practically the same way as Dodge.
Oh, man.
So for any of our, you know, well-versed baseball history listeners, all of these deaths by fastball we're talking about are taking place years before
Ray Chapman.
Years before Ray Chapman. And we get back to that in a little bit here too, because there's a weird connection.
Okay.
But yeah, it's I am horrified. You know, I did my death at the ballpark episode really early. I kind of wish I did it later on when I got better at researching, because so many people have died.
Yeah.
And I coach a team and I'm horrified. I got hit in the face this winter.
Yeah.
I can't feel half my face sometimes when I push on it. And I'm just happy I'm not fucking Johnny Dodge.
Yeah.
So.
You're very lucky.
Yeah. Rogers was devastated. Getting back to the living person, he got the news his friend died, and he
got survivor's guilt, probably. Oh, no my doubt.
Yeah. So the Montgomery Advisor published an article on June 21st, 1916, that said Rogers sent the following to the manager of the Gulls. And I quote, "Words cannot express how grief-stricken I feel over the death of player Dodge. It is the saddest thing that has occurred in my life. No one can imagine my feelings and how much I regret it occurred. The entire club is in my sympathy with his relatives."
Okay.
So very straightforward.
And that, he feels bad.
Obviously. He feels devastated. Yeah. Literally saying, this is the saddest thing that ever occurred to me in my life. Mm-hmm. And I think... I
can imagine it would be.
And kind of get, you don't really get a great, it was really hard. Dodge was easier to research than Rogers, but like you'll get a little bit, like he sounds very closed off emotionally as a Southern man, you know, in the 1916 probably already was before he accidentally killed somebody. Mm-hmm. And so just like that, like being very concise, like it is the saddest thing that has occurred in my life is like the equivalent of him like bawling his eyes out. Mm-hmm. Like in my opinion, mm-hmm. like that is as contrite as you get for somebody who is built like or raised like Tom Rogers. Okay, so Dodge is buried in Louisville next to his parents, and the Chattanooga Lookouts held an exhibition game in August to raise money for Dodge's younger sister, who was 19 at the time, and if you recall, Ed's was an orphan and now lost her only sibling.
Yeah.
And he was, like, paying for everything for her.
Oh, of course.
So as we do in baseball, there was a brief discussion on player safety and harsher punishments for pitchers throwing at batters, but it was countered with the difficulty for umpires to judge intent, especially since Dodge's tragic case, like it was clearly an accident.
Yeah, that was not. Yeah.
Yeah. The Mobile team president said that it was a lesson. And I quote, "His death should forcibly impress every player with the inherent dangers of the game and the fact that each one owes to his fellow players the duty of exercising reasonable precaution to prevent accidents."
Okay, so just everyone remember that dude over there died, which is a huge testament to how safe or unsafe this game is, and that's a privilege for you guys to play it.
So
don't
just
forget
be
that.
Really,
so be extra
really
careful.
There's nothing else we can do.
And we can't do anything else, I guess.
There's no hats that would, like, protect you from this, I don't think.
No. I've never heard of such a thing.
Yeah, like, we just got through World War I, or we're in the middle of it.
Yeah, they didn't have any
hats.
No.
That helped. Yeah, helmets. If you don't get it, helmets, people. Yeah. Helmets. So there's a brief pause to the 1916 season, but it continues. And Tom Rogers, Shotgun Rogers, was in a haze after killing his friend. I can't imagine having to pitch again so soon, but Tom Rogers would not only pitch, he would achieve perfection just 3 weeks later.
Mm.
On July 11th, 1916, 3 weeks after killing his friend, Shotgun Rogers threw a perfect game. It was the only perfect game in Vols history.
Really?
Yeah, wow. That's why I was worried you might know about the
No, that's surprising because
it was like 60-year history
for forever.
Yeah, it was a long history. Rogers was made to start with just 2 days rest against the Chattanooga Lookouts and set them down one by one. Of course, it was not without assistance of his defense. Once again, the center fielder, Billy Lee, makes a great grab going up that hill.
Goes up Sulphur Hill.
Yeah. And in right field, Gus Williams preserves the perfect game in the seventh from the Tennessean. And I quote, "To match the stunning performance, Gus Williams made a seemingly impossible stab against the colored grandstand in the seventh frame off Jake Pitler. The Chattanooga second sacker laced a pill on a dead line to left straight as an arrow towards the Negro shady stands. Gus was set far towards center, but with a Herculean gallop, he raced under the streaking ball, snagged it as near the stand, and crashed into the bleacher fence, swept forward with the momentum of his rapid pace."
Sounds epic.
Yeah. Yeah, I really should have read that before. Gave a little...
No, it was all right.
It was good, but either way. No, I just... there's a lot of references to black people in there.
Yeah.
Old. Also, from Bill Traubers... I really hope I got that right, Bill. Bill Traubers' MILB article, looking back on Shotgun Rogers' perfect game for Nashville. "After the sixth inning, the coaches for the Lookouts became so frustrated with Rogers' perfection, they put on a heckling show from the coaches' boxes. In an attempt to upset Rogers' composure, the Lookouts began a barrage of distracting catcalls and jeering, but to no avail as Rogers continued to mow them down."
It's like basketball.
Yep. And now we get back to Blinky Horn, Edzie.
Okay. I was wondering if we were going to get back to old Blinky.
3 weeks. Blinky really pushes the fucking envelope here. 3 weeks later, you understand the context. And I will tell you what Blinky Horn wrote of Shotgun Rogers' perfect game. "Like a steady sweep of a giant blade, the Gallatin Gunner's superb pitching mowed down 27 hostile Lookouts as rapidly as they came to bat. In the face of the Gatling gun delivery of the Sumner County Scythe, the Chattanooga players were moved into the morgue."
Oh my God.
Yeah!
What the fuck, man?
Like, what the fuck?
Like, was he, like... That guy's fucked, man. That guy's fucked in the head. Like, that is...
What analogy should I use for this picture?
Oh, my God.
I know, it'll be like he killed them.
That probably won't fuck with his psyche at all. Oh my God. Okay, continue.
So they won 2-0.
Jesus Christ.
As you do in a perfect game, the other team doesn't get a run. It's the only perfect game in Vols 60-year plus history. I already said that. Mm-hmm. The Vols won the league that year, and Shotgun Rogers had a 24-12 record in 317 innings pitched. It looked as though he was destined for greatness in the big leagues.
Uh-huh.
So, he's about 25, whatever, 26, somewhere in there. He goes 1917 season. He starts with the St. Louis Browns of the American League, who, I will remind you, sucked.
Yes. I mean, I can't recall a time where they were really ever very good.
So, yeah, and this is the dead ball era. It's kind of the end of the dead ball era. But I'm going to tell you some ERAs here that sound good, but they're not. He threw 109 innings in his first year in the big league, spotting a 3.89 ERA, which is...
Oh, it's awful at that time.
Yeah, 67 ERA plus, so about 67% as good as league average. So not great. His whip was horrendous. Not horrendous, but 1.44, so not great. He walked more batters than he struck out, which with a fastball like he had... You know, what the hell? And that's because he started throwing off speed pitches a lot more. And he didn't have as much feel, you know.
His arm was worn out, maybe.
Well, and also he killed someone with his fastball.
That's true, yeah. You would want to back off that a little bit.
So he's less confident with his fastball.
Uh-huh.
And when he's wild with it, he starts just throwing, like, breaking stuff because he has the yips a little bit.
Yeah.
Anyways, the St. Louis Browns sucked. And in 1918, they actually sucked less, but they had three managers throughout the season. Rodgers put up a better 3.27 ERA over 156 innings pitch and lowered his whip to 1.28. Also worse than it sounds, but still, he's on the right trajectory. It was looking up for Rodgers, but then he was purchased by the Philadelphia Athletics from the St. Louis Browns for $2,000 in May 1919. The Athletics were worse than the Browns at this time, after being great at the early part of the decade, and Rodgers would be the worst pitcher for the worst team in the league, sporting an ERA in the fours and a whip over 1.5, with more hits than innings pitched.
All right.
So he's bad. And not only is he bad, but he's bad on the worst team.
Yeah.
Off the field, it seemed like things were not going well for Rodgers. He had begun to work his way through marriages, and in the deep grief that followed the death of his friend, on top of not succeeding in the big leagues now, Rodgers began to drink.
Okay, I felt like that was maybe coming.
Yeah, it's good.
So he had worked through the marriages?
Yeah, like,
he had several marriages?
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Okay.
It's not much detail, but yeah, he's got four marriages, I can just tell you that. Okay. You know, and this is in a short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
Very short period, of 15 years or so.
Yeah.
Nearly 100 years later, the Houston Chronicle interviewed Jane Thompson, Rodgers' niece, who was 85 at the time of the interview.
Okay.
I don't think she never met him, or at least remembered meeting him, but she knew about her uncle and his tragic career. Thompson told the Houston Chronicle, and I quote, "When you kill your best friend, it just hurt him so much. He just never could hold up anymore after that. It was his friend. I don't know that it was guilt, but it was just such a tragedy."
Yeah, it really is.
So he's released from Philadelphia. He signs with the Buffalo Bisons. You gotta do the Bisons or the Mets. Mm-hmm. And he compiled a 14-15 record in 251 innings pitched, and although a better year, continued to give up hits at an alarming pace. But with a nickname like Shotgun, you might be able to get a second chance. So he plays most of the 1921 season with Buffalo, and then he gets called up for the Pinstripes in September. He's a Yankee.
Pinstripes, holy shit.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we're talking
what a turnaround.
1921 Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They
just got a new guy.
They got a guy. They got a guy. He's hitting good. And Shotgun could not do it. In five games for the New York Yankees out of the bullpen in September, he put up a 7.36 ERA in 11 innings of work.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So, getting back to Ray Chapman, one of his Yankee teammates was none other than Carl Mays.
Oh, no. Sub.
The man whose pitch killed Ray Chapman.
Ray Chapman, yeah.
So, you imagine that conversation.
Guy. Yeah.
Imagine that conversation. Hey.
Good Lord.
You killed Chapman last year.
Yeah.
Well, 5 years ago, I killed my best friend.
Oh, my God.
I
feel like that wasn't talked about.
Oh, yeah. They probably just drank and stared at a wall next to each other. Mm-hmm. Anyways, the Yankees would...
Carl Mays, from what I gather, was not that friendly.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Neither was Rodgers, especially after this.
Oh, okay.
Well, and I'm trying to remember. I think Johnny Dodge was the one that was more known for his cheerful demeanor to the point where he'd get in trouble. And they were like, oh, he doesn't care. And he's like, no, he's just nice.
Well, you did
yeah.
remark earlier about Rodgers' emotional...
Yeah.
You know.
That was more about him going out, but yeah.
No, but still.
Yeah, still. They were out for him because he was just a fun guy. But the Yankees would go on to lose the World Series, and Tom Shotgun Rodgers got a final appearance in the big leagues on October 7th, 1921, in Game 3 of the World Series. He pitched the last 1 1/3 innings of a 13-5 loss to the New York Giants. He gave up 3 hits and 1 earned run with 1 strikeout.
Okay, so not too bad.
Yep. From there, he becomes, he's 30-ish. He just becomes a journeyman in the minor leagues for a while. I didn't really give you any stats because he just slowly gets worse and worse. Mm-hmm. He stops in St. Paul, Memphis, Chattanooga, Atlanta, Mason, and finally Quincy of the B-level Triple I League, which stands for Illinois, Indiana, and Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
He did have a long career. He played 18 seasons at almost every level, totaling more than 2,740 innings pitched and winning more than he lost. The numbers never translated to the big leagues, and the biggest what-if for Tom Rogers was, what if he had got the contract for St. Louis to begin the 1916 instead of at the end of 1916?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe things would have been different, because obviously that was his best season.
Yes.
And who know if he did that for the Browns, you know, who knows. But he posted a 15-30 record in 414 and two-thirds innings pitched in the major leagues in 83 games. But still, that one game in June 1916 and the death of his friend Johnny Dodge haunted Rogers for the rest of his days, which were short due to his drinking.
Mm.
He had four wives, as I talked about, and the one who would be his widow, her name was Edna Rogers. She said that on certain nights, Rogers would stand by the roadside and pass envelopes into a car. At first, she suspected Rogers was having an affair or even supporting a secret child or family, until it was discovered after he died that the envelopes were being passed not to a lover, but to Mary Elizabeth Dodge.
The sister.
The sister.
Hmm.
So he kept paying.
So he still
paying.
Financially supported her.
Yeah, didn't tell anybody.
Yeah.
Didn't even tell his family.
Mm-hmm.
That's how closed off emotionally he was. That like.
Yeah, and how bad he felt, obviously. Yeah.
So.
Well, that's kind of nice, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll quote from Jane, his niece, for the Houston Chronicle. Edna thought it was child support for a child she didn't know of, but it was money he gave to the Dodge family. He felt like he needed to make amends for what happened. He was closed emotionally. just a weird statement at the end, but yes, he clearly was. And in 1936, Rogers was found passed out drunk. He had vomited and aspirated, and the fluid got stuck in his lungs. He contracted pneumonia, and October 1st, 1936, Thomas Shotgun Rogers, the Gallatin Gunner, died at age 44.
Ugh, that's terrible.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's too bad. I thought, I misunderstood. I thought they were both going to die, like, close together.
I figured.
I mean, I guess indirectly, the death of Dodge caused the death of Rogers, yes.
I mean, I can't make 100% conclusion at that, but my hypothesis especially given what
it seems his related family said. Based on the trend that, you know, he took after that happened.
Yeah.
You know, there was no going up.
it was all down after that.
Yeah.
And it's just like. We covered Ray Chapman. We've covered lots of people that have died, but we've never covered a friend killing a friend accidentally.
No, that's terrible. I'm never going to step into the box against you ever for the rest of time.
I don't think
because I've heard this story.
I don't think I could throw a fastball. At one time, I could kill you with a fastball. Right now, no.
Right now, no.
I'd actually be more likely to die if you hit one back at me.
Yeah, probably.
Either way, until next time, Edzie, where can people find us?
People can find us on Twitter at Doing Baseball and on Instagram and TikTok at Doing.Baseball. And I'm at EdsDoBaseball on the Twitter machine.
And I'm at SeanDoBaseball. Check us out if you want, you know, some baseball history, some fun stuff, wherever you're listening. However you're listening, give us a review, give us a rating, give us a follow, tell your friends, tell your grandpa, do whatever you can to support the pod. We really appreciate it.
And drink two loons responsibly and
all
be of legal drinking age.
Of course. Do that all the time. You should be consistently drinking a two loons while listening to this podcast. Responsibly. So until next time, I'm Sean.
And I'm Eds.
And we were doing the baseball.
Okay, bye.